Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. A doctor stabbed his two small children 46 times to punish his cheating wife. At trial, he was found not criminally responsible because he was depressed and suicidal. After 6 months in hospital, he was released. The murdered children's mother was outraged. But how far would she go to avenge her children's deaths? The story that's featured this evening is Death Bedside Manner, Psychiatrist Poison, Canadian Courtroom, with yours truly. Guy Turcotte was born on April 21st, 1972. He worked with Isabelle Gaston at Hotel de Saint-Jérôme Hospital as a cardiologist. He fell in love with Gaston in Quebec City in 1999. They moved in together in 2000, but the relationship was characterized by domestic violence from both parties. Turcotte moved out but soon reconciled with Gaston after promising to work on their relationship. The relationship improved and Turcotte proposed to Gaston at Mount Washington, New Hampshire. Gaston accepted his proposal and they were soon married. Their son Olivier was born in 2004, and then 2 years later, their daughter Anne-Sophie. In mid-January 2009, shortly before Gaston and Turcotte planned to leave for a trip to Mexico with their children, Turcotte was informed that his wife was having an affair with their personal trainer and friend Martin Hewitt. Hewitt's girlfriend, Patricia Guerreau, notified Turcotte of the affair and provided emails exchanged between Hewitt and Gaston. Turcotte and Gaston decided to separate. 2 days after coming home from their trip, Turcotte left the family residence. Gaston and the children stayed in the house, and both parents agreed to share custody. During the separation, conversations between Turcotte and Gaston were often very heated. On February 8th, Turcotte found out that his children had been to a Quebec carnival with their mother and Hewitt. The carnival had special meaning to him since he had lived in Quebec City and attended the carnival for many years. "I could not accept that Martin spent time with my children, as if I was being replaced." The next day, a former neighbor told Turcotte that the day he left, Hewitt had spent the night and had been staying there almost every night for the past 2 weeks. Turcotte said the information made him flip, and on February 10th, he went to the family residence to fetch his son's sweater and found Hewitt in the kitchen. Turcotte said, "You stole my wife. You betrayed me. You were my friend." And he punched Hewitt in the face before leaving the house. On February 20th, Turcotte dropped by the house again, and this time Gaston ordered him to leave, telling him, "You are going to stop controlling my life. Now, if I want to, I can change the children's names. I can get custody. I can move anywhere in Quebec." That day, while he was at work, colleagues noted no outward signs of distress. He exchanged emails with Gaston and also picked up his children from daycare and school. He telephoned Gaston later, and she informed him that she had changed the locks on the house and consulted with a lawyer. He replied, "If you want war, you will get it." After putting the children to bed, he read dated emails from Gaston and Hewitt. Afterwards, he began searching the internet for sites with information on how best to commit suicide. The next morning, February 21, 2009, two police officers followed up on a call placed to 911 after the respondent had expressed suicidal thoughts to his mother. When they entered the respondent's home, the officers discovered the bodies of two children, a boy and a girl, in their beds, stabbed 46 times in their upper bodies, 27 times for Olivier and 19 times for Anne-Sophie. Turcot was discovered under his bed, covered in vomit and blood. He told police he drank windshield wiper fluid and wanted to die. He was taken to the St. Jerome Health and Social Service Center, where doctors there realized the man was one of their colleagues, a cardiologist. Hospital director Francois Verin confirmed the man was having marital problems with his wife, who was also a doctor at the hospital. The two had worked there together for about 6 years. Doctors decided to transfer Turcot to a hospital in Montreal, where he remained in stable condition. Quebec provincial police took over the investigation and returned to the scene. Autopsies on the siblings were expected to take place in Montreal to determine the cause of death. Police contacted the children's mother, who was on a ski trip. Guy Turcot was charged with two counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of his two children. The trial began on April 12, 2011. Defense lawyer Pierre Poupard told the jurors at the start of the trial that they'd have to determine whether the once prominent cardiologist intended to kill his children. What's really at stake is, what did he have in his head? Why? Poupard said. Did Guy Turcot, a human being, cause the deaths of his kids with the intention of doing so? In a statement filed by his defense lawyer, Pierre Poupard, Turcot admitted he committed an illegal act and caused the death of his two children, but claimed it wasn't a premeditated act. Poupard told the jurors that they will have to determine Turcot's state of mind at the time of the crimes and whether he knew what he was doing. The defense's first witness was Turcot's own mother, Marguerite Fournier, who presented the jury with a booklet of photos of Turcot and his children, depicting the kids at play, at Christmas, on birthdays, on outings, and when traveling. Each photo brought quiet sobbing from the accused. Turcot's mother testified about the last phone conversation she had with her son before the children were killed. Turcot lamented his failed marriage to Isabelle Gaston, from whom he had separated just a month earlier. Fournier said her son sounded depressed and told her Gaston was cheating on him. "It has been going on for weeks. It was happening in my house, in my bed." His mother advised him to look forward, but her son didn't seem to hear her. But then he said something that struck her as out of character. "I love you. Tell Dad I love him." She remembered her son repeating those words over and over during the hour-long conversation. "When I heard that discourse, I was afraid he was about to take his own life." Fearful he'd been drinking, Fournier wanted to drive to her son's that night, but her husband had told her to wait. The next morning, she drove to the house, finding the shades drawn, no sound coming from inside, and no one answering the phone or the loud knocking on the door. "Maybe my husband still had hope things were okay, but I had no hope at all," she testified. Fournier's chilling 911 call, pleading with police to hurry to the rented home, was played in court. Turcot sobbed in court as Crown Prosecutor Claudia Carboneau outlined the details of the double slaying. A crime scene technician gave jurors a view inside the home: two knives, two blood-stained beds, a near-empty windshield washer container in a bathroom, and vomit on the floors. The couple's life coach recounted that Turcot had told them the little boy pleaded with his father to stop. He was stabbed 27 times, while autopsy results showed the five-year-old Olivier tried to defend himself from the attack. Witnesses who encountered Turcotte at the hospital following his arrest told jurors he asked not to receive medical treatment, with a nurse, Chantal Duhamel, testifying that he said he killed his children to spite his wife. He said he wanted to make her angry, and the way to do so was to take away from her what was most precious. The concentration of methanol in Guy Turcotte's blood was the equivalent of between 3 and 5 beers for an average-sized man, a defense witness testified. The same witness, toxicologist Anne-Marie Fauquer, testified she found a potentially fatal dose of methanol in Turcotte's system the day after the February 2009 slayings. Under cross-examination by the Crown prosecutor, Fauquier said she estimated someone who has consumed that much beer is conscious, coherent, and able to have discussions and negotiate. Fauquier said such a person is quite capable of doing what he has to do, but had noted in her initial testimony one's level of awareness can be reduced after consuming such levels of methanol. She explained that the effects of methanol in the human body are similar to those from the consumption of ethanol, the alcohol found in wine or beer, but with less of an impact. Prosecutor René Verret questioned her experience on methanol intoxication, with Fauquer replying that she had worked only on 3 or 4 similar cases and the only survivor was Turcotte. Evidence presented, though, had not established the quantity of washer fluid he had consumed. Later, Claude Roulard, an expert in neuropharmacology, said methanol does result in memory loss. He referred to a scientific article regarding a mass poisoning in New York in 1953, where people had been drinking a mix of fake whiskey and methyl alcohol, or methanol. Several people ended up going to hospital to be treated and had suffered major memory loss. Some couldn't recall setting foot in the hospital, how they got there, but they appeared rational when observed by medical personnel. On May 9th, Guy Turcotte took the stand. Speaking slowly but clearly, Turcotte spoke about a childhood where he was the awkward outcast, about his 11-year journey to become a cardiologist, and how he came to meet his now estranged wife. He was born 3rd of 6 children in a suburb south of Montreal and grew up in a devout Catholic family in an overflowing house where there wasn't much communication. He was not very popular, not very athletic, and his early years were tough. He was the target of jeering and always the last person to be chosen on teams. I was the little guy everyone laughed at and made fun of. I wore big glasses and I was timid. He said he had a number of relationships, but everything changed when he met Isabelle Gaston at happy hour in a Quebec City bar in 1999. I was attracted to her right away. We spent the whole night together, and I fell in love with her that day. He described Gaston as having lots of charm, smiling, full of energy, intelligent, and a leader. I found myself lucky to be with this girl. I was surprised she was attracted to a guy like me. I think I'm pretty ordinary, and she was just so hot. He told of the couple splitting once in 2001 following an argument where punches were thrown by both of them. But after a few months, the relationship was rekindled, and not long after, he proposed to her on Mount Washington. His demeanor on the stand was more composed than earlier in the day. When he sobbed at his lawyer's tabled photos of him playing with his children and celebrating birthdays and holidays. In his testimony, Turcotte also recalled disordered scenes of the murder event. He is standing in his son's room. He has a knife in his hands and stabs his son. His son cries out no and moves away from him. He realizes that he is hurting him. He panics and stabs him more. He has a similar memory with respect to his daughter. He sees himself in the bathroom. He drinks windshield wiper fluid. He has blood on his hands. He has hurt his children and looks for the knife to stab himself in the heart, but cannot find it. On the stand, the Crown asked Turcotte about a phone call he made to his colleagues at Hotel de Hospital after he was arrested and jailed. In the call, Turcotte mentioned his desire to collect a check for $353 and that he had wanted to leave his calculator to a co-worker. Turcotte replied that at the time, after being in jail for 8 days, he was having difficulty coping with flashbacks of the deaths of his children and that he decided to kill himself. And before he ended his life, he wanted to make sure all his affairs were in order. The Crown also questioned Turcotte about the events of the night of the two killings and why he did not take his own life that night. You stabbed your children 46 times. Why didn't you have the courage and the strength to stab yourself even once? Asked the prosecutor. Turcotte said he wanted to stab himself but could not find the knife he used to kill his children. How did you not see the knives? How would you like me to explain it, replied Turcotte, elaborating that his memory of the events of that night was still shaky. Previous witness had explained how a knife was found under Olivier's body and that a second knife was found on the edge of a bathtub near Turcotte's bedroom. Now, finally testifying, Isabel Gaston turned to her former husband in the prisoner's box. You weren't a bad father, that I know, she said, sobbing. And I'll never say you were a bad father, never. About half the courtroom wept while listening to Gaston's testimony. She testified that the couple always had its problems, but she never believed Turcotte would ever hurt his own children. The testimony was so highly anticipated that members of the public began lining up an hour and a half before the courthouse opened just to get a seat. While she often broke down on the stand, Gaston plowed through nearly 2 hours of testimony, recalling the final moments with her children. She dressed Olivier the morning of February 20th and gave him a kiss as he went off to school. He waved back at her the final time Gaston saw him. A few hours later, Anne-Sophie would be dropped off at daycare. But before setting off, Gaston scurried around the car for her daily exchange of a minimum of 20 kisses with the toddler, who was sitting in the child's seat. Do you know how much I love you, Gaston says, the little girl told her as they shared their kisses. The jury also heard that tensions had flared for an umpteenth and final time between Gaston and Turcotte, when she had the locks changed at the home. She switched them following a number of run-ins between her ex and her new boyfriend, Martin Hewitt. She testified that Turcotte was livid. You want a war, you'll get a war, she recalled him saying over the phone. Gaston panicked at the threat, but she felt the warning was related to money. She ended up deciding to go on a girls' weekend northeast of Quebec City. The next day, the kids were found dead. She found out about it on the news. I feel stupid for not thinking that he'd hurt the kids, Gaston said. I never thought for a second he'd do that. Gaston, an emergency room physician at Hotel de Hospital in St. Jerome, also cried as she told the jury about her relationship with Turcotte, which began when they were medical students in 1999. From the beginning, we had our ups and downs, Gaston said. In 10 years, I couldn't say it was all black or all white. The couple fought and fought a lot about everything from parenting and money to intimacy and kids' extracurricular activities. Gaston said she tried to improve their relationship through reading self-help books and employing a life coach. Despite the good that came with Olivier's birth in 2003, and Anne-Sophie's in 2005, there was plenty of bad. Gaston said they separated once early on while dating, after she found gay porn on his computer. She found more gay porn again in 2008. Although she confronted him, Turcotte vehemently denied being gay. That discovery, coupled with the arguments and a lack of intimacy in their marriage, would be the beginning of the end, she said. Gaston began a new relationship with Hewitt, a personal trainer of theirs. It blossomed quickly, but she decided to keep it secret. I regret today not having told Guy myself earlier, Gaston said, referring to how Turcotte heard the news from a third party, from Hewitt's ex. "I waited because of Anne-Sophie and Olivier. Gaston stated that she and Hewitt are still together." Gaston defended Turcotte as a good father while they were together. She said, "Each contributed as a parent. Mothers and fathers don't always see eye to eye, but I think we were complimentary," Gaston said. Even when the couple split, she had hopes they might still be friends. She said she wanted them to be a team, to work together on raising the kids. She last spoke to Turcotte on May 17, 2009, when she called a psychiatric hospital in Montreal and an operator transferred the call. Gaston hadn't gone to work that day and was thinking of committing suicide herself. She had already written the letter. First, she wanted to ask Turcotte, "Why? Why the kids, Guy? I love them more than I love myself," she told him. He replied, according to her, "Me too." The judge had instructed jurors that acquittal was not an option, as Turcotte had admitted to stabbing his children, Anne-Sophie and Olivier, in February 2009. The trial garnered unprecedented media attention in Quebec, with members of the public lining up for hours every day for a seat in the courtroom. 39 witnesses testified, including Turcotte, his parents, Gaston, and numerous mental health experts. The jury had to decide on one of four scenarios: first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter, or not criminally responsible by reason of mental illness. It reached a decision July 5th on what would have been the jury's sixth full day of deliberations, rendering a verdict of not criminally responsible due to mental disorder, adjustment disorder with anxiety and depressive moods. Isabella Gaston admitted to being astounded by the outcome, despite having prepared herself for all potential scenarios. "With this verdict, my path will really not be easy," Gaston told reporters at the St. Jerome courtroom, Quebec courtroom. "I'm in shock. Even if it had been first-degree murder, I could not have been satisfied because it would not have brought back my children in this life," she said. Gaston doesn't want an appeal and said she won't testify again. "For me, and I speak for myself alone, it's over. I will never return to a trial." There was public outrage expressed in the media in the province of Quebec over the verdict, but in the rest of Canada, the story didn't seem to resonate. News of the verdict did spread like wildfire on the internet, however, with hundreds of people turning to Twitter and other social media to discuss the outcome. Several major province of Quebec television personalities even weighed in to express their own personal disgust. "Very, very disappointing verdict. Criminally not responsible? I don't believe it," wrote Guy LePage, host of a popular television talk show in Quebec, on his Twitter account. Another prominent Quebec TV personality, Julie Snyder, wrote that she was crying while thinking of the verdict. "I'm astonished," she added. Veteran lawyer and former Quebec Crown prosecutor Robert Lahaye said the public's emotional response is not surprising. But it's important to remember that juries are not supposed to be populist. He said juries render justice based on evidence. They weighed the evidence, dissected it, and decided at the end of the day and concluded reasonably and without emotion, Lahaye said. Crown attorney Claudia Carboneau said she would study the case before deciding whether to appeal. "At this point, after a long trial, our thoughts are with Anne-Sophie and Olivier and the family of Anne-Sophie and Olivier," she said. Isabelle Gaston asked outside the courtroom to be left alone, that she could have her privacy again. Gaston told reporters she hopes a place after life exists where she can see her children again. "I'd like a sign that they're all right, that they're happy," she said in tears. Guy Turcotte's future is now up to a psychiatric review committee that will assess his state of mind and his risk to public safety. He'll undergo a series of psychiatric evaluations at the Pinel Institute in Montreal before the committee decides whether he needs to remain in custody. Senator Pierre-Hugues Boisvenu, who doubles as a victim's right advocate, has stated that jurors should be barred from sitting on complex murder cases in which a defendant pleads insanity. The senator also feels that the government should be concerned about a sharp rise in the number of not criminally responsible verdicts in Canadian courts. The senator made the comments after the latest verdict came down in the trial of former Quebec doctor Guy Turcotte, who admitted to fatally stabbing and mutilating his two children. Turcotte said he suffered from anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts amid a crumbling marriage. The cardiologist could be freed later this summer if the Criminal Review Board decides he's not a danger to himself or society. Federal Justice Department statistics show a startling increase in not criminally responsible verdicts of almost 50% in the last 20 years, a spike largely attributable to Quebec courts. These are disturbing statistics, said Boisvenu, who plans to raise the issue with Justice Minister Rob Nicholson. When someone admits to having committed a crime, there is a responsibility that comes with it. Boisvenu said jurors in the Turcotte case were barraged with conflicting testimony from psychiatrists, which made their job extremely difficult. Some countries have chosen to have psychiatric evidence provided by three experts who are independent of the Crown or the defense, he said. Statistics show that nearly half of all not criminally responsible verdicts between 1992 and 2004 came from Quebec courts, even though the province has less than a quarter of the Canadian population. Ontario, Canada's most populous province, had 37% of such verdicts in the same time period, a finding that irks Boisvenu. He says Quebec courts are soft on defendants who plead mental distress. The gap between Quebec and other Canadian provinces should concern us, he said. It is a symptom of a society that trivializes the crime and thinks that punishment is wrong. While Senator Boisvenu's statements do raise some interesting points that may have some merit and of concerns, the statistics cited seem to imply that jurors are an underlying factor of the increase of not criminally responsible verdicts. But that is simply not the case. Most of the cases of NCR in Canada are tried before judges only. A much more prevalent and disturbing trend is Crown prosecutors failing to aggressively dispute defense assertions of mental impairment. In many of the cases, the judge was presented with an agreed set of facts by both the Crown and defense, where the only witnesses were the psychiatrists who made assessments based on meeting the accused a few short times. The judge is bound by judicial precedent to make a determination of guilt based only on the evidence presented, so the verdict is inevitably not criminally responsible. For months, we have read horrific details of the killings of the Turcotte children by their father, Guy. Since Turcotte admitted to stabbing his two children, Olivier 5 and Anne-Sophie 3, the trial was about why he did it. On Tuesday, a jury found him not criminally responsible by virtue of his mental state at the time of the killings. The jury has given us a terrible verdict. Turcotte should have been found guilty of murder. This was a case that highlighted issues related to depression, family violence, and social values. Defense argued that Turcotte killed his children because he was depressed. I want to refute that assertion. My perspective is not from a legal viewpoint, but as a social worker with 30 years of experience in counseling severely depressed people, often following a separation or divorce, and working in the fields of family, workplace, and personal relationship violence. I understand the debilitating effects of depression, and I know that it is not unusual for severely depressed people to think about killing themselves. They are focused on ending their own suffering, and they are not preoccupied with the impact of their suicide on their family members. Nor I should add, are they preoccupied about killing others unless bipolar illness is involved? In this case, that was not alleged to have been a factor. Physical symptoms of depression include a loss of energy and extreme fatigue. It is therefore hard to understand how someone with severe depression could have found the energy to stab his son 27 times and his daughter 19. It is far more likely that Turcotte's energy was fueled by rage and the desire for revenge. His activities leading up to and after the murders were puzzling. He was consumed with the need to put his affairs in order and to ensure his ex-wife did not have access to money. He even refused to pay for his children's funerals. These actions do not point to someone who was in a deep depression alone. Rather, they point to an extreme disconnect with feelings of love for his children. They also point to a self-absorbed individual who acted in spite. Turcotte was portrayed by his defense lawyer as a loving, devoted father who could not bear to lose his family and who was so overwhelmed by the infidelity of his ex-wife that he lost it. In a moment of desperation, we were led to believe he killed his children and tried to kill himself. This argument is not valid. Turcotte would have had ongoing access to his children. More of an issue than the children no longer being in his life, I believe, was his having lost control of his wife. How egocentric it was of him to think that the children would be better off dead than being shared with their mother. Killing the children indicated a desire to punish his ex-wife for her ending their relationship. This is what conjugal violence is all about. Family violence experts with whom I have talked about this case view the killing of young children by their fathers at a time of separation and divorce as an act of rage and revenge. Often the perpetrator, as with Turcotte, does not exhibit previous violent behavior. This case also brings into question society's values. It highlights a gradual erosion of personal responsibility for one's behavior and the ease with which arguments can be introduced into a murder trial to remove that responsibility. As reported in the Gazette's July 2nd story headlined, "Judge tells jury they must agree on motive," the defense claimed it was an act of twisted compassion, an extended suicide to spare his children from a fatherless life. This perversion of language attempts to reduce Turcotte's personal responsibility for his children's murder. Extended suicide is an oxymoron. To kill yourself is a suicide. To kill others is murder. To try to put the killing of other people under the umbrella of suicide is shocking. The children in this case do not have a choice of living or dying. This choice of words is dangerous. It leads us down a path that would destroy society's core values and attacks a key part of our moral code, thou shalt not kill. Twisted compassion was another phrase used to justify the killings. There was nothing compassionate about causing the deaths of these two young, healthy children, nor in the extremely violent way it was carried out. They would have suffered excruciating pain in their final moments. Turcotte, in my view and the view of colleagues with whom I have spoken, became so enraged and bent on revenge that he gave himself permission to kill. In doing so, he jumped the barrier of permissible behavior. The jury has given us an unfortunate verdict that has weakened our social fabric. Frima Engel is a Montreal social worker who specializes in workplace conflict resolution, bullying, and violence prevention. She is a contributor to the Canadian Center for Abuse Awareness online magazine, abusehurts.com. Guy Turcotte, the Quebec doctor found not criminally responsible for killing his two young children, is allowed to take unescorted bike rides from a mental hospital, QMI agency has learned. The bike rides are not violations of the former cardiologist's confinement conditions. The review board ruled in June that while Turcotte must remain in hospital, he has the right to leave the premises to allow for the transition between his current environment and life in the outside world. As of this month, Turcotte has been allowed to leave Pinel for between 8 and 16 hours a day and can even sleep over at relatives' homes. In 2012, Turcotte said he was better than he was before the brutal stabbings in February 2009. He felt less shame, less guilt, and had more self-esteem, and was ready to be released. Testifying before a mental health review board to determine whether to keep Turcotte another year at the Pinnell Psychiatric Institute or release him to the care of his family, Turcotte said he was not a danger to anyone. A psychiatrist said that the double child killer Turcotte is an ideal candidate to return to community, as a panel decides whether to free him from the hospital. Defense trial witness Dr. Lewis Morissette told the review board there was no reason to justify the hospitalization of the former cardiologist who stabbed his young children 46 times in 2009. "He is no longer the same man," said Morissette. "He has improved everything he could improve to make sure he doesn't reoffend. He has not had any symptoms of mental illness since the fall." The audience at the Pinnell Hospital included Turcotte's ex-wife, who has become a victims' rights advocate since the verdict. She said Turcotte was a chameleon who has not changed since the murders and still poses a threat to her. "I can't stand it," she told reporters. "It's insulting. He says I'm lying." The defense continues to downplay the rage he expressed to me. Isabelle Gaston lambasted the court system for letting her ex-husband Guy Turcotte walk the streets of Montreal and potentially practice medicine again after killing their children in 2009. Gaston has spoken out against her ex-husband's release from a psychiatric institution 6 months after being sentenced and just over 3 years after he admitted repeatedly stabbing their two young children in their beds. A mental health review board deemed that while he still posed a risk, he could be released from a psychiatric institution under strict rules. He is now a free man and said he intends to reapply for his medical license. He also said he hopes to fall in love again and have more children. "We have a person that is a cardiologist that never had a psychiatric incident, not at all," Gaston said. "I have trouble to understand how someone in 5 or 6 hours can do an interview with someone and have a conclusion that he is not a danger to society or is mentally insane. I have to respect the jury's decision, but it confronts me and my values because I think they didn't do their job." Gaston said she has spent a year researching similar cases and has seen large disparities in the results depending on the judge, the experience of the lawyers, and even how rich the defendant is, as it influences the quality of the defense. She added that she now lives in fear of what her ex-husband could do next. "What brought him to do that is still there," she said. "Is it going to be me? Is it going to be another woman?" She said that she is still haunted by the deaths of her children, who are also covered in defensive wounds. Her son did not have one single fatal wound, so she knows he died a long, painful death. "To know that my children faced the person that they should have trusted the most and that they were left by themselves to die with no one holding their hand," Gaston said as she struggled to contain her tears. "I struggle all the days, every day of my life, and I think until I die I will struggle." Turcotte's release outraged Quebec residents, and even the Canadian government called Turcotte's release unacceptable. "We believe that Isabelle Gaston does not deserve to live in fear of her children's killer, and neither do victims of similar crimes across Canada," said Federal Cabinet Minister James Moore. Prime Minister Stephen Harper's government drafted legislation to make it more difficult for mentally ill offenders to be released from psychiatric facilities. Yet it will not influence Turcotte's case. For now, Turcotte has been released on conditions that he does not contact his ex-wife or her family, that he continues his therapy, and that he lives at an address approved by the Pinnell Institute. He is not taking any medication for mental illness presently. The release comes after Turcotte underwent 6 months of regular therapy, which he said has left him less anxious. He said he is able to deal with his stress much better now. Pierre Rocher has been overseeing his mental health for the past 6 months and said He is really satisfied with the change in the man and believes he does not present a short-term danger. The Crown Prosecutor has filed an appeal in the case, which will be heard in the new year. On September 30, 2013, arguments were heard in Quebec's Court of Appeal. The Crown was requesting the 2011 jury decision be annulled and a new trial ordered. The prosecutor argued that the judge in the first trial should have never even given the jury the option of finding Turcotte not criminally responsible. Crown said there was a lack of evidence to support a defense of not criminally responsible for reason of mental illness, arguing instead that the killings were premeditated, intended as revenge against his former partner, Isabelle Gaston, who was having an affair. The Quebec Court of Appeal has now ruled that legal errors were committed in the original trial, including by the Superior Court judge who presided over it. Turcotte drank washer fluid later that evening in what he says was an attempt to kill himself. The Crown said a not criminally responsible verdict should only be reserved for cases of mental illness, not ones where a suicide attempt might have triggered an after-the-fact blackout. The appeals court verdict sided with such critics. Turcotte's lawyer, Pierre Poupart, argued unsuccessfully that he suffered from serious mental illness at the time and was intoxicated on windshield washer fluid as part of a suicide attempt. Poupart argued that the trial was thorough and meticulous, and the jury ultimately arrived at the right verdict. Gaston was watching the case closely and was in court to support the overturning of Turcotte's sentence. She said the case is weighing heavily on her and that its outcome will greatly impact her life. The stress is coming out. For me, it's a big step for our justice system to repair, for me, what is the biggest injustice in my life. She said the defense's argument that Turcotte was suicidal and therefore unable to distinguish between right and wrong sets a dangerous precedent. In November 2014, the Quebec Court of Appeal overturned the 2011 jury not criminally responsible verdict and ordered a second trial on two counts of first-degree murder. Gaston became an outspoken advocate for justice reform after the deaths of her two children and said a second trial could never fix the damage and the distress she suffered during the first one. Turcotte, who faces a second trial for killing his two children, told the judge he deserves bail because he's not a danger to society. I think it can be useful rather than wasting my time in prison, Guy Turcotte told Judge Andre Vincent. Looking pale and drawn and wearing foot shackles, the former heart specialist asked to be released to his uncle's house pending his second double murder trial scheduled for next year. Turcotte tried to persuade the judge that freeing him again would not undermine the public's confidence in the administration of justice. During my release, I often went out in public places and I never had problems, except for one time in a shopping center when a woman recognized me and became aggressive. A day earlier, the bail hearing heard from a psychiatrist who said Turcotte fell into a deep depression when the Quebec Court of Appeal ordered a new trial last December. He was confined to a Montreal mental hospital for 7 months, took double the normal dose of antidepressants, and had persecution delirium and episodes of paranoia, Dr. Renee Roy testified. He was like a little five-year-old boy, she told the court. He bit his nails. He was really in a pitiful state. The second trial for a former Quebec cardiologist charged with first-degree murder and the deaths of his two children began with the critical task of selecting a jury to hear the case. The case will be heard before Quebec Superior Court Justice Andre Vincent, with 3 months set aside for the jury to hear witnesses and final arguments. The Quebec Court of Appeal ruled in 2013 that Turcotte should stand trial again after concluding the trial judge had erred in his directives to the jury. The Supreme Court of Canada refused to hear Turcotte's attempt to have the new case dismissed. Turcotte, 43, was somber and impassive as he sat in a prisoner's box, closed his eyes briefly when the judge said he was accused of having killed his two young children. Out on bail since December, Turcotte moved slowly as he navigated the corridors at the courthouse, accompanied by his parents, as about 25 journalists and cameramen watched on. Crown Prosecutor René Verret said he expects to call 30 witnesses. Pierre Poupard told the trial he will argue that his client should be found not criminally responsible for the deaths. Poupard told the 11 jurors he will call witnesses as well as experts, doctors specializing in the examination of what goes on in the brain. They will talk about an acute suicidal crisis. Poupard said Turcotte's mental illness brought about that condition. The high-profile defense lawyer told the jurors they will have to determine whether Turcotte was in a state of such psychological distress. He said he will try to prove that the accused would never have caused the children's death had he not been in that mental state. He also reminded the jurors that they will need to reach a verdict based on the evidence and not on their emotions. Condemning a person who is not criminally responsible would shake the legal foundations and strike a blow to the integrity of the judicial system, Poupard said. It would be horrible to be condemned for acts that are not the acts of a person of sound mind. He warned jurors there are still things to see that are painful and that nobody, even Turcotte himself, can be insensitive to the facts of the case. The defense lawyer also asked the jurors to not forget that the children who were victims of this tragedy were also his children. Turcotte took the stand in his own defense, speaking in a low, monotone voice. Turcotte testified he often had brief suicidal thoughts after his frequent acrimonious arguments with his ex, Isabelle Gaston. He said the stormy relationship made him feel discouraged and depressed. Turcotte testified he thought about ways to end his life quickly, such as by hanging, or ingesting windshield wiper fluid or poison. But Turcotte said he never went through with it because he said he couldn't do that to the children. Turcotte testified while his relationship and arguments with Gaston got worse and more heated, his relations with their children got better all the time, adding that he felt good being with them. He testified he never thought about leaving Gaston because he wanted the family to stay together. Guy Turcotte said he was mocked and intimidated as a child and that he had few friends. I was sort of the scapegoat. The defense at the Guy Turcotte trial has called psychiatrist Dominique Bourguet to the stand to convince the jury that the cardiologist was not mentally competent when he killed his two young children in 2009. Her specialty is homicide cases involving family members, and she's testified for the courts hundreds of times. She explained her resume and how she went about analyzing Turcotte's claim of being mentally ill when he killed his children, Olivier and Anne-Sophie. Bourguet met Turcotte on two occasions in 2010 while he was detained under psychiatric observation. She concluded the former cardiologist suffered from a mental illness called adjustment disorder with anxiety and depressed mood. It is a relatively common condition triggered, as the name implies, by anxiety and depression. The illness usually lasts 6 months on average and disappears once sources of stress are no longer present. The disorder is considered an abnormal reaction to stress. Many of the people with this illness will try to commit suicide. The psychiatrist added that Turcotte did not suffer from a personality disorder in his youth, although he does display obsessive-compulsive behavior. The double murder trial for Guy Turcotte has moved away from the descriptions of the physical evidence to the murky mental evidence of a killer's state of mind. Dr. Jacques Talbot testified on behalf of the defense on Monday at Turcotte's trial for the double murder of his children. Talbot was the first doctor to meet Turcotte when he was admitted to the Pinnell Psychiatric Institute and was his doctor of record for 152 days. He first met Turcotte on February 26, 2009, 1 week after the two children were killed. Talbot said Turcotte was suicidal and suffering from an anxiety adjustment disorder. Talbot said that Turcotte's first question was to ask if his children were still alive and what had happened to them. Previous witnesses have explained that because he had drank methanol, Turcotte may have been suffering from amnesia. Talbot testified when he told Turcotte that Olivia and Sophie were dead, Turcotte shut down emotionally. He diagnosed this as disassociation due to stress. The doctor said he placed Turcotte on medication for depression, suicidal tendencies, and sleep difficulties. On February 27th, 1 week after the slayings, Talbot said Turcotte had reached a sort of breaking point and couldn't live anymore and wanted to commit suicide. He noted he couldn't do it while at the Pinnell Institute, but didn't rule out eventually killing himself. Talbot described Turcotte as trying to insulate himself from his emotions. People do this, he explained, as a defense mechanism when one's emotions are simply too much to bear. Turcotte began to immerse himself in complicated literature and penned a list of specific items to recover from the home where the slayings took place, including a sack of potatoes, a compact disc, and a pepper mill. Talbot confirmed what Turcotte had said, that much of his memories of February 20th were scattered, and he only remembered flashes. In March 2009, Turcotte was still angry at his now ex-wife, Isabella Gaston, over her infidelity. In April, the suicidal thoughts were still present. 1 month later, he said, his life is over and that death would be better. Turcotte told the psychiatrist he deserved to suffer and was surprised at the support from his own family and the friendliness of staff at the Institute. While listening to the testimony, Turcotte stared at the ground, not looking at the jury, the witness, or his lawyer. Bourget explained this in more detail to the jury. The night he killed his two children, Guy Turcotte was no longer able to deal with the emotional burden of his rapidly changing personal life, was on the verge of committing suicide. It was like one shock after another, he told the jury. Turcotte's mental state was like that of an overflowing glass of water, and he couldn't handle the rest of his marriage and the infidelity of his wife. He was in an acute suicidal crisis, calling it a pervasive state. The person becomes overwhelmed, obsessed with suicidal thoughts, and then they lose touch with reality. Bourget defined the condition as a disease, not just an emotional reaction to stress. On February 20th, he had decided to end his life and began drinking windshield washer fluid, which contains methanol. As he went about his plan, he decided to bring his children with him. It's clear, even on its own, methanol poisoning is likely to affect one's judgment and alter their consciousness, she said. A telephone conversation Guy Turcotte had with his mother the night before he killed his two children was sort of a suicide note, the defense expert witness testified. Louis Morissette, the psychiatrist appointed by the defense to evaluate Turcotte, said the hour-long telephone conversation was a sort of spoken farewell letter where he told his mother he loved her and asked her to convey that message to his father and siblings. Morissette said he believes Turcotte had sunk into a deep despair on February 20th and was in the midst of a suicidal crisis that led him to consume windshield washer fluid before electing to kill his children out of a clouded logic that he didn't want them to find him dead the next day. Under cross-examination, he was asked to defend that conclusion, giving previous testimony from two witnesses, including Turcotte's ex-wife, Isabel, suggesting he mentioned he was seeking revenge both before and after the slayings. It says what it says. There is no explanation, Morissette said, adding, while revenge is possible, the clinical evidence doesn't back it up. Morissette spoke of the final conversation and said Turcotte was already intoxicated and had likely been consuming windshield washer fluid before talking to his mother, and suggested Turcotte's suicidal thoughts came suddenly. When Guy Turcotte stabbed his two young children to death, he was engaging in an act of homicidal altruism. Louis Morissette was cross-examined by the Crown for a second consecutive day and told the jury Turcotte killed his kids because he didn't want them to suffer. He said the ex-doctor acted out of homicidal altruism because he wanted to prevent them from witnessing his eventual suicide. But he added that logic was faulty and a result of a sick mind. Morissette and the previous defense witness, Dominique Bourguet, concur Turcotte was suffering from a suicidal crisis after the end of his marriage, which led him to drink windshield washer fluid the night he killed his two kids on February 20th, 2009. Crown prosecutor Rene Verret accused Morissette of trying to minimize the effect drinking windshield fluid, which contains a toxic substance, methanol, had on Turcotte. You are excluding the methanol as a contributing factor, Verret asked. Yes, it was very marginal, Morissette said. Verret was incredulous about the claim Turcotte really wanted to kill himself because he chose to drink methanol, which after ingestion brings about a slow death. The Crown prosecutor also asked Morissette to explain why Turcotte called his mother the night of the murders, asking her to come save him, which she could have done before the methanol took effect. Morissette said Turcotte truly wanted to kill himself that night, but failed. Bourguet told the jury she believes the acts were a product of a man whose brain was profoundly sick. His brain was not working like a normal person's, Bourguet said, adding that Turcotte was disconnected from reality. He was in a state of mental confusion, was out of touch with reality, she said. He was thinking so much about dying, he was no longer thinking of anything else. She testified that Turcotte was not thinking of killing his children the night they died. For him, at that moment, it was not to kill, it was to bring his children with him. She said that this logic was clearly faulty and irrational. We understand that this way of thinking is highly abnormal and can be explained in Mr. Turcotte's case by the presence of psychiatric illness. She said a parent who is contemplating suicide doesn't think about killing, but rather about an expanded suicide, because a good parent doesn't want to abandon their children and leave them behind. His actions are all the more absurd, she said, because he's causing them to suffer by killing them, to spare them the suffering of finding their father dead. Bourguet testified at Turcotte's first trial in 2011 and saw him again in July 2015 to make a second report. In his cross-examination, Crown Prosecutor Rene Verret questioned whether Bourguet had been too willing to believe everything Turcotte told her during her analysis. He asked Bourguet to explain why on the day of the killings, Turcotte was able to go to work, call his mother, and cancel two appointments if his brain was not working properly. Bourguet responded that Turcotte's brain wasn't working well, but it could still make certain connections. The Crown wrapped up its case after calling 29 witnesses after a 12-week trial. On December 6, 2015, Guy Turcotte was found guilty of second-degree murder in the stabbing deaths of his two young children in 2009. The 11 jurors returned with a verdict on their seventh day of deliberations. A muffled yes could be heard in the courtroom when the verdict was announced. It came from the direction of Isabella Gaston. Gaston spoke to reporters after the verdict and said she was relieved by the jury's decision. Today I hope the souls of Olivier and Anne-Sophie can be at peace, she said. For me, this is the day I can begin to rest. Since their deaths, I've had the impression my life has been a struggle. Now it's all about healing. But Gaston said her life will never be the same, even with the verdict. Tomorrow, I will not wake up with my children. Turcotte's sentencing arguments took place on December 18th. At the sentencing hearing, Gaston told Turcotte to look her in the eye as she defiantly declared that while he has broken her heart, he has not broken her resolve. I want you to know, Guy Turcotte, that you have achieved your goal, she said, as Turcotte, his head down, sat shaking in the prisoner's box. I want you to look me in the eye. You have broken my heart forever, but I want you to know that you have not broken my resolve. Many in the courtroom cried. The handcuffed Turcotte cried and tried to wipe away the tears as he listened to her. The judge, hearing the arguments, invited Turcotte to speak. The doctor, the ex-doctor, jumped at the opportunity. People cannot understand the shame I have, he said in a weak-sounding voice. I cannot look people in the face, I'm so ashamed. I want to tell you, Isabella, I didn't testify to make you feel responsible, he said. Added he wanted to explain what he'd done and gone through after hitting the bottom of the barrel. It was not to hurt you. I know I can never forgive myself for what happened. The Crown Prosecutor suggested Turcotte serve a minimum of 20 years before he would be eligible to apply for parole, while the defense countered it should be less than 15 and closer to 10. Gaston, the only witness the Crown chose to have testify Friday, told the judge she always wanted to be a mother and that losing her children ended that dream. The woman who existed in 2009 no longer exists and never will again. She explained that she has tried to have other children since the slayings and underwent procedures to help that happen. But at 43, I have lost hope. The jurors had a choice of four possible verdicts, not criminally responsible or guilty of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, or manslaughter. Vincent asked them last week if they had any recommendations for the minimum number of years Turcotte should serve, but they said they had none. Since the murders occurred in 2009, Turcotte will have only one murder conviction sentence, with the second conviction to be served concurrently. The only decision will be how long until parole eligibility, between 10 and 25 years. Quebec Superior Court Justice André Vincent will make his ruling on January 5th, 2016. Isabella Gaston read a statement at the sentencing hearing for her ex-husband Guy Turcotte. This is a translation of the letter she submitted to the court. Your Honor, I hesitated about speaking with you before. I was worried I wouldn't be heard. Victims, it seems, must always wait their turn. What we have to say is too much to be heard all the way through. After much thought, though, I chose to exercise my right to speak because you aren't among those who have prevented me from saying what I needed to get off my chest. I've endured difficult proceedings and for years, and my place was at the back of the room. I endured. It is with courage and relief that I'm speaking to you today. Aside from my concerns about not being heard, standing before you and saying out loud everything I've endured, lost, and felt seemed to be at odds with my desire to forget and my constant effort to rebuild what is left of my life. I'm here for myself to help me move forward and to make peace with what I can change and give me the strength to face the future. I'm still standing. I am resilient, but I hope that when it comes time for you to render your sentence, this letter and my voice will echo and remind you what I have suffered because of Guy Turcotte. I want you to remember that he did nothing to help my life make my life easier after the deaths of our children. We easily recognize the consequences of convicting the innocent, but we too often overlook the consequences of justice denied. By killing Olivia and Anne-Sophie, Guy Turcotte broke my heart and destroyed a big part of who I was. He annihilated the precious life choice I had made, being a mother. I was in 2009. The woman I was in 2009 no longer exists and never will again, socially, psychologically, financially, professionally. Olivia was the most wonderful little boy, and Anne-Sophie was the most extraordinary little girl. When we are young, we dream about what we want to be when we grow up. We see a future for ourselves. Some dream of winning the lottery, others of becoming astronauts. I dreamed of having children. The morning of February 20th, I had two beautiful children, and less than 24 hours later, I had none. I was still in shock a few days after their deaths when there was a knock on my door and I was given a list of items to be retrieved from the house to pay for his lawyers. I suffered a great deal of anxiety as they threatened to sell off the children's toys. They had no real financial value, but symbolically, for me, those toys were worth all the treasures in the world. I was still being hurt. I had to hire a lawyer so my children's belongings weren't lost forever. The death of my children means I will be working through the complexities of my grief and post-traumatic stress for the rest of my life. I'm learning to tame my heartbreak. Many days and much of my downtime have been devoted to this process and will continue to be devoted to this process for the rest of my life. Since February 20th, I have learned to smile even when I am in pain, even when I am suffering. I have had to learn live with constant fear because some people have called me a slut, a whore, a moron, among other things. I have received hate mail. I've had to go to police after receiving threatening letters at work. I have felt enormous guilt because some people said I was responsible for the deaths of my children. For a long time, I didn't think I deserved to be alive or to be loved. Guy Turcotte never took responsibility for his actions. He painted himself as a victim, inferring that I was responsible for what he did. With every passing day, I worry that I will forget the happy memories I have of my children. I'm afraid of forgetting the faces, their faces and voices. I miss them. I envy parents whose children are still by their sides. It has made my friendships and my family life painful. I have had the same friends for years, and they all have children the same age as mine. Even though I have projects, when you don't have children, when the legal process has been underway for 7 years, there is little to talk about. Until the trial and legal proceedings are over, they will always be the main topic of conversation. My friends' children have asked me questions. I've had to learn to lie because there is no good way to explain the unexplainable. I was refused life insurance because the insurance company deemed my risk of suicide too great, even though I have never attempted it and I have never had any mental illnesses. I was told many parents mourn the death of their children and they never get over it. I can't increase my disability insurance, and since we have already maximized Mr. Turcotte's and minimized my own, I will never be well covered in case of illness, not at least in the medium term. My joint bank account was emptied, which caused me much stress because I was worried that I had been a victim of identity theft. I missed days of work and incurred lawyer's fees to recover the money that was taken. Someone also assumed my identity to obtain information about me from my insurance company. I gave up my job as a coroner because the many legal proceedings made me unavailable to take on new cases. It took me years to get that job, which I had taken all the necessary steps to obtain. I had to give it up after 2 years with sadness because it was a job I had coveted since I started in medicine. I stopped working in the emergency room. It was work that I loved and I had done full-time for almost 12 years. I realized that given the lack of sleep and the haphazard schedule, I was increasingly capable of dealing with the horrible flashes of what my children suffered. I was afraid of freezing up. That's an example of post-traumatic stress. It's a psychological reaction that occurs when we suffer a blow to our mental and physical well-being. And it can inflict much pain. Maybe you didn't see it in all of the photos, but I saw my children with all of their wounds and injuries just days after their death. I cradled them. My children died alone in their beds. It's unimaginable. The attack came from the inside, from someone I trusted, but most importantly, from someone Olivier and Anne-Sophie trusted. Beyond their physical pain, I cannot imagine what they must have been thinking. And have not seen all of these horrible images just once, but many times. And as a result of the many legal proceedings, I have stopped counting my sleepless nights. It took 7 years, two trials, an appeal of an appeal, and several administrative procedures, but finally, on December 6, 2015, justice was served. I sacrificed my private life not by choice but by obligation. I could not continue to look at myself in the mirror knowing that what had happened was a grave error. Despite my distress and my struggle, I could not endure the suffering of the proceedings without speaking out whenever I could. Even today, in spite of the verdict, I remain bitter. I don't understand why we didn't proceed more quickly. judge, at the beginning of my battle, I was told to forget about it, that I would not be able to change things. But I found failings in the system. For years, we have not placed any controls on the quality of medical evidence presented at criminal trials. I want you to know that I sacrificed my health and my life projects for this battle, which I believe is a fundamental one. In September 2016, I will have put in 5 years of intense work for it. I still feel a certain frustration toward a government system that does not wholly recognize someone like me, whose children were killed as a victim of crime. I do not understand why we don't change the IVAC law in this regard. There are so few of us. I'm still hoping that one day a minister or other official will come and call me to say, yes, we are changing the law for parents whose children are killed. I believe this would protect the children because at least the aggressor won't have the pleasure of knowing. They will also kick to the curb families who aren't as fortunate as I am. In closing, I would like you, Geeter Turcotte, to know that you have achieved your goal. You have broken my heart for good. However, despite all that I have suffered because of you, I want you to know that you have not killed my resolve. You have not killed my capacity to marvel, nor my ability to love. Even broken, my heart still beats strongly for Olivier and Anne-Sophie. I'm a better person because of them. With this verdict, I can now rest. I am happy. I'm waiting for snow so I can make a snowman. And when spring comes, I'll watch the tulips bloom. I'm enjoying my new life and my freedom. Isabelle Gaston. You've been listening to Death Bedside Manner with your host, Dan Zupansky. Have a good evening and Happy New Year. Good night.